Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
You know me, I'm a glass half full guy. So why don't we start with the Jets and the Giants? Let me start by congratulating the Jets for winning the Failure Bowl. Now, I did not spend the entire weekend in New York only to come back here to California and clown everybody in that city. I'm not about that. I'm not doing that. In fact, what I'm going to do is hype Jamal Adams. Hype Jamal Adams for one of the filthiest plays you are ever going to see. I need you to roll it right now.
Third down and a long one, close to two. Barkley the lone set back, bunch set right. Play action. Jones back to throw. Under some pressure, he'll be hit. Jamal Adams takes the ball away. He's going to run right and score. Jamal Adams to the five is into the end zone for a touchdown.
Jets radio on the call. Let me break that play down for you. First off, Adams comes on the blitz and absolutely bullies Saquon Barkley on the blitz pickup. That's not some slight third down back he's dealing with. That is pound for pound one of the strongest guys in the NFL, and Adams just goes right through him, bulldozes him. Then he gets Daniel Jones, and then it's over. That's a grown man taking a football from a child. Hey, you, give me that. That might be my single favorite play of the entire year. Adams might be my single favorite guy living and working in New York. I mean, that was awesome. That is a beautiful play. In fact, I think I need to see that one more time.
Play action. Jones back to throw. Under some pressure, he'll be hit. Jamal Adams takes the ball away. He's going to run right and score. Jamal Adams to the five is into the end zone for a touchdown.
I'm sorry, man. That's funny. That is funny. Ball security much? Dimes? Jones did not exactly fight to retain possession of the rock there, did he? In fact, he damn near handed it to him like Adams with Saquon Barkley. What a soul-destroying moment. He dominates Saquon, and then your alleged franchise QB just gives him the ball. Meanwhile, at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the Packers playing the Panthers in a battle in the snow at Lambeau, a game Green Bay wins 24-16 by stopping Christian McCaffrey at the goal line on the final play. Let me say this about the Panthers and Kyle Allen. The sample size is growing, and that dude is battling. Even though they did not get the win, he fought his ass off on the road, in the snow, against a fierce pass rush, and nearly ripped that game nonetheless. I couldn't have been more impressed with him in defeat. In fact, to me, that was more impressive than some of the wins. They could be in very good hands with this guy. He's got a lot of swag. He's got a ton of it. You could feel it back when he stepped in this studio in February. Speaking of quarterbacks going on the road and doing some work, how about giving Kirk Cousins some bleeping credit?
You like that?
I mean, for real. Like all those stats about Cousins on the road and on the road against teams with winning records. Yes, I know the numbers. I know the stats. They're horrible. Well, he just got a win on the road against a team with a winning record and in prime time. Now, I'm not going to say that's a signature win because I know he and the Vikings have got much bigger plans than beating a Cowboys team that looks more and more fraudulent every single week. But that's still a nice win for the Vikings. That is still a brutal loss for the Cowboys. It gives Minnesota 5 wins in their last 6 after it looked like their season might be coming off the rails. And that loss drops Dallas into a tie with Philadelphia in the NFC East when it looked like Dallas was going to run away with that division earlier in the season. Furthermore, what the hell were the Cowboys doing at the end of that game? Coming into that game, did the Cowboys have some sort of requirement that they had to get Ezekiel Elliott a certain number of touches or that shiny-ass stadium was going to explode? Because Minnesota was selling out to stop this guy, and Dallas was hurting them through the air. Dak Prescott was sitting on 388 yards and 3 touchdowns when he led the Cowboys down to the Minnesota 11. But on second down, the Cowboys hand the ball to Elliott. Stop for no gain. Third down, called another run. This time, a negative 3 yards. And then Dallas goes on to lose. Good job, good effort, great execution, even better play calling. The hell were they doing down there? And then moving along, I'm not sure what's more wild. Patrick Mahomes coming back from a knee injury quickly, to throw for nearly 450 yards and three TDs and losing, or that Tennessee beat KC on a TD with 23 seconds left?
Tannehill looking, firing over the middle, caught. Humphreys five, Humphreys end zone, touchdown Titans, touchdown Titans, touchdown Titans, Adam Humphreys.
Titans radio. I mean, what's more shocking? Tannehill completely reinventing himself and looking like a legitimate go-to starter, or the fact that they sealed that win with a block?
The Decatur Georgia native out of the hold of Dustin Colquitt. Snap. Block! Block! It's been picked up by Sim. It's blocked by Kalu. Joshua Kalu.
I love that guy in the background screaming, block! 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 Was that the best part of that, or the fact that internet truthers all lined up to say that Tennessee lined up offsides on that play? Or the fact that Titans offensive lineman Taylor Lewan went off on Taylor Lewan after the game?
Before we even start this whole thing, my penalties are a problem. I am 100% an issue with that. It's not intentional. I do not mean to do it. My intentions are good. I'm just trying to finish. And it's killing the team. And I know that. You guys need to know that. No one needs to call me out or anything because I got it, boys. I am completely screwing the team with the amount of penalties I've had in these last, six games? It's crazy. It's horrible. I cannot get penalties. I'm sorry. There's no need to ask about it because I know I'm an absolute liability when it comes to penalties.
He's not wrong. He is killing them with penalties. And I guess credit for coming out and saying it, but not really. Nah, not really. It's like getting credit for coming out and saying, hey, man, all right, I'll own it. I'm breathing oxygen. I'll own it. Don't ask me about it. I know it. I am. You're just stating a fact. So credit, I guess, for not running from it, but that's about it. I mean, tell us something we don't already know. Then there was Lamar Jackson, and the complete dismantling of the Bengals.
Jackson,
15 of 17, 288 total yards, four touchdowns, and in three quarters of work. It was so dominant, we saw RG3 for a quarter. And the two completions, or I should say incompletions, were a spike to stop the clock and another pass that was nearly caught. Nobody seems to know exactly how the passer rating is calculated, but I know a 158.3 when I see a 158.3. Perfection. And he's just the second quarterback in NFL history to have a pair of perfect passer ratings in the same season. That's two for him. But none of that comes even close to the run. You know which run I'm talking about.
Jackson will keep it on the read option. He's got it at the 40, 35, spins at the 30. He's got room, 20. Lamar Jackson, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens! Lamar Jackson with the spin, the sprint, and the score!
Jackson! Ravens radio on the call. His head coach, John Harbaugh, has seen pretty much everything. He was asked what he thought about that spin move.
I said to the offensive coaches on the phones, I said, they'll be watching that run for decades and decades. You know, that's one that everybody in the country is going to see by tomorrow afternoon. That was something that's rare. That was special.
Pretty much. Everybody will be watching that for decades. Watching it's awesome. Trying to describe it, though, is pretty much impossible. Like, I can't break that down step by step, move by move, because that's like art. That's like art. That's like the Mona Lisa of runs. That was like Michelangelo breaking ankles and embarrassing fools on a football field. So don't bother coming in with some clever line about Jackson being a cheat code or that's a video game move, because it's none of those things. You can't recreate that run on your PlayStation or your Xbox. And here's the other thing about Lamar Jackson that might make your head explode. The guy has not even been an NFL starter for a full calendar year. The one-year anniversary of his first start is still a week away, but that was his 16th career start, so now he has started a full season in the NFL. Look at the numbers. Let's extrapolate the numbers. Over 16 games, 63% passing, nearly 3,200 yards through the air, more than 1,250 yards on the ground, 30 total TDs, and overall 13-3. Let me repeat that. If you stretch those numbers out, he's thrown for 3,200 yards and run for 1,250. Again, the hell is that? Even more impressive, he's not impressed at all. Check out his answer to the question of whether or not that run was the best he ever broke off.
I don't know. It don't matter. He scored. Move on.
This dude's so cool. He's awesome. Yeah, I just dropped one of the greatest runs in NFL history. One y'all will be watching for decades. But y'all need to get over it. I already have. Awesome. That was an awesome week 10. Clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or need some more energy? Well, let me answer that by telling you what we don't want. We don't want a bar. We don't want a sugary snack. We really don't want an energy drink. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. Where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a legitimate wood fire. So it's tender and tasty, not tough. So why is it so good? Because of the business behind it, the family behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take their smoked beef extremely seriously. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four great flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest, which goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? My man, Will Brinson. Will, what's going on? How are you?
Thanks, Jim. I love my niche. And, hey, congratulations, man. It was a long time coming, but glad to see you got in the Hall of Fame.
I appreciate that, Will. Thanks so much. Nice of you to say. All right, so the Vikings, Will, going to Dallas, and they beat the Cowboys in prime time. If Minnesota loses that game, Will, you know all the stats. We'll be talked about all day long when it comes to Kirk Cousins. So how significant a win was that for the Vikings and for Cousins personally?
Enormous win. You know, he went out there and he played well against a Dallas defense that's been okay. I mean, they've been great. Completed 72% of his passes, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He didn't make any mistakes. And I thought there's a really good job, and this is really the difference, I think, with what we've seen from this Vikings coaching staff. Kevin Stefanski, who's going to end up being a hot name in head coaching hiring circles this offseason, I think, if he continues this work, he leaned big time on the play action, which is where Kirk Cousins thrives. He's been dating back to Michigan State. He's been an awesome quarterback when they utilize play action. And they leaned on Dalvin Cook, too, but not just in the run game. That's where I thought they really struggled against Kansas City last week. They tried to run Dalvin Cook up the middle. You got to get him in space and get him out on the edge. And they did that, and they did it in the passing game, too. You know, he wasn't putting up huge, you know, he had whatever, 170 total yards, but most of his yardage came through the passing game early on. And I thought that really put the Dallas defense in a weird spot. It got them back on their heels. It allowed them to sort of run downhill a little bit more. We saw Alexander Mattison get involved. And Kirk Cousins wasn't forced to do anything that made him uncomfortable. That was the key thing for me. To go on the road in primetime, enormous win for Kirk Cousins. And look, I think it at least puts him in the general MVP discussion, probably more on the fringes with Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson leading the way.
Will Brinson joining us. All right, so where does that leave Dallas? You talked about Minnesota's play calling. When you look at what Dak Prescott did in that game, Will, what do you think of the play calling when Dallas got down to the 11-yard line on that potential go-ahead drive?
I mean, is there a bigger coward in football than Jason Garrett? I mean, like, I get that he's been there forever, but I mean, the guy loves, I have a hard time believing that it was Kellen Moore's idea to call those run plays. I mean, Dak Prescott is carving up this defense via the pass. The Vikings secondary has struggled all year. Dak is getting protection. He's seeing guys wide open. And then you decide to run the ball twice while you're trailing by 4 points. And they're sauntering around, taking their time. I mean, that was a chance for this offense to run up tempo, to let Dak throw, to keep the Vikings just, you know, reeling as they were. I mean, he was moving the ball down the field, Jim, and then to let Dak throw to Amari Cooper, who's having, you know, an incredible game. Get throw to Randall Cobb. He's carving guys up. You know, he's carving guys up in terms of these routes he's running, and they just run to Zeke Elliott right up the middle into the teeth of the Vikings defense. To me, it was a easily the worst coaching decision, non Freddie Kitchens division, and it just goes to show why you can't back the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl as long as Jason Garrett's their coach. He plays scared, he coaches scared, and I just can't trust that team with him in charge.
Will Brinson is joining us. All right, Will, would you like to take a stab and try to explain exactly what Lamar Jackson did to the Bengals on that run yesterday?
It was the perfect embodiment of the B button, the spin button, right? And I guess kids these days don't even do the spin button anymore because they have the right joystick or whatever. But back in my day, you had to bang the button to get the spin going. And Lamar, I mean, he just snuggled up against two guys sprinting at maximum speed down the field and just cuts on them. It's like somebody took a Ferrari engine and put it inside a quarterback's body. What he's doing is incredible. I mean, he's, you know, John Harbaugh, said before the season, Jim, that that this Ravens offense was going to be complete, unlike anything we'd ever seen, completely different than anything we'd seen. And I sort of mocked him because, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? Like, how is it going to be different? He didn't mean schematically, I don't think. I mean, part of it is different. You know, they run a lot. They bring in the tight ends. They allow Lamar to throw. They have these different receiving weapons, all that. But, I mean, it's more about Lamar Jackson is just an unholy weapon in this offense with Greg Roman pulling the triggers. And I mean, look, I know his stats aren't there from a passing perspective on a week in, week out basis. And I understand that there are a lot of people who believe that it's not sustainable to be a rushing quarterback over this lengthy period of time. But man, I mean, what Lamar Jackson is doing right now in terms of the passing game and the running game, combining those to put up these performances, it is unlike anything we've ever seen. And this MVP race is going to be fascinating because you have a guy like Watson playing really well, despite, you know, sort of some lack of stuff around him, even with Hopkins there, J.J. Watt getting hurt. You got Russell Wilson, who's just putting his team on his back and going to try to do it again tonight. And then you have Lamar, who's just really changing the way we look at, rushing quarterbacks and we look at athleticism. He's like a souped up Michael Vick, it feels like. And that's something we've never seen before.
We're talking to Will Brinson, and we will for a few more moments. So, Will, what about Kansas City? They get Patrick Mahomes back, and he played great, put up huge numbers, but they still get beat by Tennessee. How costly, then, is that loss for the Chiefs and their hopes for a bye?
Yeah, it's a pretty big L for them because, you know, you're chasing the Patriots, obviously, and now you're chasing the Ravens as well. And with Baltimore continuing to win, and I think that we believe that the Ravens can keep winning, I mean, Jackson's playing, you know, out of his mind. They still have, of course, they have a game against the Browns, a game against the Jets, a game against the Bills. There are lots of wins out there available for them. I think Kansas City is going to be fighting an uphill battle here a little bit because at the end of the day, while the Chiefs are a dynamic, explosive, incredible to watch offense, you know, they still can't get it done on defense, and there is a formula for beating them. You can grind them, you can keep the ball away from Patrick Mahomes, you can run the ball effectively. And when you look at some of the teams they have coming up, I mean, they gotta play the Raiders again. I know people don't really want to take Oakland seriously, but Josh Jacobs is running his tail off. They have to go to Foxborough. They have to go to Chicago against a good defense with a decent run game. And they have the Chargers twice. And I'm sure the Chargers will screw one of those games up, but they'll probably give them a good game once or twice, maybe even this coming Monday.
We're talking to Will Brinson. Will, I got to ask about the Rams. They start the season 3-0. They've lost three straight. Then they won two straight. Then they lost in Pittsburgh yesterday. We know they've got problems on the offensive line. How would you describe what you're seeing in this team right now?
I'm shocked, Jim, because we know Sean McVay is, this genius of a coach. And I think he's a really good coach. I'm not questioning him. But the one thing that we haven't really seen from him is an adaptation once defense has sort of figured out, A, what his offense revolved around, and B, that this offensive line isn't very good. So, you have to be able to make adjustments in this league. I mean, that's what separates Bill Belichick from everybody else. His adjustments, not just before the game on a week-to-week matchup basis, but in-game as well. And it just doesn't feel like Sean McVay in two of the – I think I look back at the Steelers game and the 49ers game, the games where they got pushed around by better defenses. It didn't feel like he had any adjustments in the second half. I mean, their lone touchdown was a Dante Fowler fumble return, right? And then they had the safety and a field goal. I mean, that offense is supposed to be the lifeblood of this team, and they can't get anything going against a remotely competent defense. I think it is very fair to say that the Rams have a long shot to make the playoffs, given how good the 49ers look and given that the Seahawks have a couple game advantage on them and Russell Wilson.
We are talking to Will Brinson. All right, Will, speaking of that game, you've got Seattle at San Francisco. I love that matchup. Bottom line, are 6 points too much of an ask for the Niners to cover tonight? Who do you like?
Yeah, I think it's too much. And I'm really going to lean on two big stats here, right, Jim? I think when you look at the Seahawks, they have Russell Wilson. And I put Russell Wilson in the – I don't want to put him, like, squarely in the MJ Brett Favre, don't ever bet against him in primetime status, but I think he's pretty close. 7-3-1 against the spread in primetime spots, you know, since being drafted by Seattle. He covers in primetime. He wins these games. And Pete Carroll's got an outstanding record, not just against the NFC West, but 12-3-1, I believe, against the spread as an underdog in divisional games since he took over in 2011. Wins a lot of those as an underdog. I know that the 49ers are a dangerous team on defense. I know that stadium will be hyped up. I know that Jimmy Garoppolo played really well last week and is getting a bad Seattle defense, but I just can't bet against Russ when it comes to primetime. I'd take the 6. I think it ends up being a shootout, too. I think it gets played in the 50s or higher between two teams that can throw the ball if they need to and might meet some resistance in the run game.
All right, before you go, Will, I got to ask you this. Last week, when the Chargers tweeted out the Wolf of Wall Street clip in response to the report about a possible move to London, you tweeted some of the details of what happened to Jordan Belfort. After that, somebody responded to you with, "It's a meme." You correctly responded with, "It's not a meme. It's a movie clip." What happened next, Will?
I got okay boomered, which is apparently the new thing that kids are doing to anyone that they perceive as remotely old. And technically, Jim, I think I'm a millennial. I mean, I don't consider myself one, but, you know, you're born in 81. I think that technically qualifies you. Well, some dude replied, okay boomer. And then I got 75 GIFs of like shut the F up, okay, like boomer, okay boomer, just getting blasted from every corner of the internet. And since revealing that happened, every single person that I've seen or talked to or tweeted with over the past 7 days has replied, okay, boomer. I've somehow been labeled as a geriatric old man, and you know what? I may just have to embrace it and eat dinner at 4:30 today.
Just roll with it, boomer. Hey, Will, for the record, Will, so they know, how old are you?
I'm at 38.
Whatever you say, boomer. Okay, boomer. Incredible. Will Brinson, my man, you got to check him out. He is a good friend of the program. He is the host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast. He is a CBS Sports senior writer and a noted boomer. Will, I got your back on this, man. You were right. You were right then. You were right now. Have a great night, and it's good to have you back on, Will.
Likewise. Thanks, Jim.
My man, noted boomer, Will Brinson. Okay, boomer. Hey, now. We all love to refresh our snack drawers, am I right? But when was the last time you refreshed your sock drawer? If you can't remember, then it's probably time for an upgrade. Bombas socks are made with comfort innovations such as arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed. All socks speak for super comfortable. And they come in hundreds of colors and styles, making them perfect for men, women, and kids. I love the way they feel. I love the way they look. I love the value, and I love the mission behind the company. Bombas' new line of merino wool socks that are made from soft, warm, and naturally moisture-wicking merino wool are designed with all of Bombas' classic comfort features too. From keeping cool and dry on your morning run to staying comfortable in your office's freezing air conditioning, Bombas' socks are ready to work just as hard as you do. And for every pair of socks you buy, Bombas will donate a pair to somebody in need. I guess what I'm saying is, Bombas are what your feet daydream about. Buy yours at bombas.com/roam right now and then get 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com/roam and get 20% off. These socks are amazing. LSU and Coach O did something truly incredible on Saturday. They went into Tuscaloosa and they smashed up Nick Saban and the Tide in their house. There were over 101,000 people in that building for that game, and they witnessed an absolute beating. Yeah, and don't fall for the final score of 46-41. That was a 33-13 game at halftime. That was a beatdown. They were up by 20 on a team that had a 31-game winning streak at home. You don't do that to Nick Saban and Bama. Not in their house, you don't. But as Coach O said to his team at midfield after the game, quote, "This is our house from now on. The reason I'm telling you that is I'm going to roll the clip. It's not easy to make out, but that's exactly what he says. This is our house now.
Hey, we've been waiting for this moment, man. Let's go right here in the middle of the field. Let's bring it down. Tigers on three, baby. Because this is our house from now on.
Yes, sir.
Tigers on three. One, two, three. Tigers!
Sure as hell is your house. Hey, look, I don't want to read too much into one game, but if you go into Tuscaloosa and you put that kind of beat down on Nick Saban and his team, then it is your house. And it might as well be Joe Burrow's Heisman, because that was a monster performance. 457 total yards, 3 TDs, and an answer for everything that Alabama threw at him. And he was carried off the field by his teammates, and he deserved it. And while we're on the topic, how about some love for Clyde Edwards-Helaire? 20 carries, 103 yards, 3 TDs on the ground, 77 yards and TD in the air, and he had the game-icing play on the ground.
Snap to Burrow, hand to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, goes near side, stiff arms a man, gets to the 5, breaks through, stays upright, into the end zone! Touchdown, Tigers! Clyde Edwards-Helaire wanted it more than anybody in crimson and white, and he drove the Crimson Tide into the end zone to make it 45-34, Fighting Tigers of LSU.
Tigers Radio. As defensive line coach Dennis Johnson said while walking off the field, quote, "It's a new day in the West. It's a new bleeping day in the West." He's not wrong either. Again, only one game, but that felt so much bigger than only one game. LSU didn't think they could win that game. LSU knew they could win that game. LSU knew they would win that game. They showed up with so much swagger and confidence, and then they backed it up in that dominant first half. And yeah, I know, Tide fans, I know you're going to want to point out that your QB was all banged up, that your team made mistakes, that the refs screwed up, and that you came back in the second half. Here's the truth. The last two times that Alabama has faced a good team, they've been hammered by that team. 44-16 to Clemson in the national title game, 46-41 at home Saturday night. That's 90 points in two games against two good teams. You know, with that vaunted Nick Saban defense. I'm not saying that Alabama's dead, but you can't tell me that they're still the juggernaut that they used to be, because they're not. And you certainly can't tell me they deserve a spot in the playoffs right now, because they don't. Not after getting hammered like that at home. You don't get wrecked like that at home and then say, yeah, well, we still deserve that spot because we're Bama. You don't. In fact, what you need is to take a seat right now. There may be a path back, but they're going to need a lot of help to get there. Saturday afternoon and into Saturday night was all about Coach O. How about that post-game interview?
Take 60 minutes. We know what it was like to watch, but what was this one like to coach?
You know what? It's a great game to be in, a great rivalry. I am so happy for the state of Louisiana and all the LSU fans and our football team and our coaching staff. They worked very hard for this victory. It's a much-deserved victory for our football team and our great state of Louisiana and our great university in LSU.
I've never seen a guy get a Gatorade bath and not even flinch. Like, it literally, not a figure of speech. It went right off his back, I think. He didn't even flinch. You think he won that game very much? You think Coach O didn't pour absolutely everything he had into ending LSU's 8-game losing streak to Alabama? You think he wanted to erase that 29-0 loss from last year? I'm not sure there's ever been a coach who wanted anything more than Coach O wanted that game. And even that was nothing compared to the speech from the locker room that one of his guys live streamed.
We're going to beat their ass in recruiting. We're going to beat their ass every time they see us.
How's that?
You understand that?
Yes, sir.
Roll Tide, what you?
Yeah!
Quote, "We going to beat their ass in recruiting. We're going to beat their ass every time they see us. You understand that? Roll Tide, what? Bleep you." So
Roll
awesome.
Tide, what you?
Yeah!
Let me make this clear, too. Perfectly clear. If anyone from LSU apologizes for that speech, that apology is not accepted, because there's nothing to apologize for. That was a tremendous win, an even better moment. If you beat Alabama in their house the way LSU just did, by just taking it to them, you absolutely can say, Roll Tide, bleep you.
Roll Tide, what you?
Yeah, but USC didn't need this guy. USC didn't want this guy. Never mind that he wanted that gig badly. Nope. USC did not need or want a guy who just went into Tuscaloosa and kicked the Nictator's ass up and down the field. Nice going, Trojans. That looks so horrible right now. Pat Hayden should have fired himself alongside Lane Kiffin on that tarmac in 2013. What a horrible decision that was, not making Eddie O your permanent guy. Am I right, Sark?
Get ready to ride on, baby. Let's go!
Am I right, Sark, who happens to be the Nictator's OC? I mean, what a surreal day for Ed.
Because this is our house from now on!
Yes, sir!
Tigers on three! 1, 2, 3, Tigers!
Go, Tigers. Go, Tigers. What an amazing win that was. Bill Peters is my guest. Bill, it's great to have you on. How are you?
Well, good, Jim. How are you today?
Good, good. Nice to visit with you. Thanks so much. You dropped a tough one, Bill, to St. Louis in overtime on Saturday. You trailed 2-0 and then scored twice in the third to get that game into OT where they won it. I know you're always looking for wins, not moral victories, but what do you make of the way your guys battled in the third period to force that OT?
Well, I really liked our game overall. There was a lot of positive things in the game, and obviously it was a big point. We would have rather to have two, obviously, but that's not the way it unfolded. Unfortunately, we took a penalty in overtime that led to them getting a power play, and they executed on it. But no, we're trending in the right direction. We like our current homestand wraps up Wednesday, as you alluded to. We've got 5 out of the 6 points on the homestand to this point. We're 6-1-2 at home, so there's some positive things happening within our game.
We're talking Calgary hockey. Head coach Bill Peters joins us once again. You know, when you go up against the champions like that and you know how they handle their business on the ice in a hard-fought game where there's not a lot of space, you're trading checks with them, what's it say about the team that you have and the attitude in your room?
Well, we're a very resilient group, very confident group. We're starting to play well together, and guys are aware of that. They see that. We believe we're going to win each and every night, so I think the confidence level is high right now amongst our group. We have good goaltending. Our penalty kill is third in the league, and we got some other areas that we're working on to become better and a more complete team, but we'll get there.
We're talking to Bill Peters. I'm going to ask you about the goaltending in a minute. I want to ask you about Matthew Tkachuk. He scored the goal that made it 2-1. Bill, it's hard to believe this kid's only 21, and yet he's in his fourth full season already. How special a player is he?
Well, he's a special player. If you look at what he's done this month, he really did a good job in Nashville battling and getting us back in the game with a late goal. He won it with everyone's calling it the tweener shot in overtime. Was incredible. And he, overtime win against Arizona. He gets the game winner there, and then he gets us on the board against St. Louis. So he's coming up clutch. But, no, he's a special player. He's a real good kid, and he loves the game. He's got a brilliant mind. Everybody talks about, his grit, and he's got a little bit of old school in him, and he definitely does. But he's got an underrated skill set and really understands the game and has a passion for the game. So he's got a bright future.
So I was going to say, that goal against Nashville is absolutely amazing. It's unreal. And then you've got the production standpoint, and you've got that grit, and you've got his approach and his process. So what about the future, which you just referenced? What does the next step look like for him, and how high is that ceiling?
Well, he's got a real high ceiling, and I think he's just starting to understand what he can accomplish. Typically in the old days, it used to be centers who drive a line. I think he's a special enough player that he can drive a line as a winger. We're using him now more 3-on-3, 4-on-4, and he's coming up big. He's been everything we throw at him, he's able to handle, and then more. And I like the way he gets emotionally invested in a game. He's all in.
We're talking to Calgary head coach Bill Peters. Bill, every time I have an NHL head coach on, we end up talking about how much young talent there is around the game. As you look around the league right now and you see the young guys coming in and making an impact as quickly as they are, what kind of thoughts do you have about that?
Well, it's incredible how good they are at such a young age and how fearless they are to make these types of plays. You talk about the Michigan goal, the lacrosse goal, unfortunately scored against us the other night. Then we have the tweener by Chucky, and then you just see this stuff each and every night, and these guys are fearless in their mindset and their approach to try these plays, and they have so much skill that they can actually pull them off at full speed in NHL game environments. So, you know, you didn't used to see that, you know, 5-10 years ago, but it's a credit to everybody in youth hockey, minor hockey, coaching major, junior hockey, and NCAA hockey that these guys come in and they're ready to play. They're ready to play in the top six. They're ready to be top four D-men, and there's no holding them down. There's no holding them back, and the veteran guys are, appreciate them, and they know they need them in order to win, so they're more than welcomed onto the scene.
We're talking hockey. We're talking to Calgary head coach Bill Peters. So, Bill, you mentioned your goaltending. You've got goalie David Rittich. He's been really strong this year. He used to be a huge fan of Coca-Cola, but legend has it, he really cut that back. He took on his conditioning and took it to a higher level. How has he looked to you so far this year?
No, he's been excellent. Ritter's been good right from day one of camp. He's played probably more minutes than we'd like. He leads the NHL in minutes played, but therefore we lead the league in games played. We've played the most out of anybody, so that kind of goes hand in hand. But Ritter made a commitment to his fitness and his overall game and his approach to his game, and that comes with maturity. And he sees the starter's job, and he's done a real good job and gives us a chance to win each and every night.
You know, it seems to me also, Bill, you tell me I'm wrong, but his teammates rave about his personality and what he means to the team in that regard. So how valuable is it to have a guy that, well, not only plays it the way he does, but can keep it light and fun, but knows how to get his work done?
No, he's a good pro. You know, he made the commitment in the offseason to getting in better shape. He knows, you know, bright lights are on, he's going to dial it in, but you know, he's got a great personality, and guys play hard in front of him because of that. He's never going to, you know, point fingers and throw guys under the bus, you know, on goals against. He's going to own a lot of stuff. But he just loves to compete and loves to play hard, and he cares about his teammates. So it goes both ways.
We're talking to Calgary head coach Bill Peters for a few more moments. You know, when you first took over that team, it was coming off a season where they had missed the playoffs. Then you lead them to their first divisional title in 13 years. How far has the team come in terms of the style that you're looking for since you first arrived?
Well, you know what? We came in with a plan on how we wanted to play, and the guys dug in last year and really bought in, and it, you know, went well. We got off to a bit of a tough start last year, and then once we hit our stride, I thought we were a real good hockey team. And we've had a little bit of adversity here early in the season this year, which isn't a bad thing, and we've come through it on the other end, and we're starting to play real well on a consistent basis. So very encouraged with where we're at right now.
You know, when you and I last spoke last December, I'm kind of curious, like in the off season, how did you go about approaching it? Like when the season ends, do you start planning for the next one immediately and start going to work, or do you give yourself a chance to kind of relax, unwind, and rest and recover a bit like the players?
Well, you know what, you do a little bit of both, but until the Stanley Cup is awarded and the playoffs are over, you're watching every night, so you're still kind of in, you know, coach mode and everything else. And, you know, the way it is for me, I've got a younger son that's still in school, so I got to wait till he's out of school till we get to the lake. So you're still grinding and getting prepared for the following season. But once the Stanley Cup's awarded and school's out, then it's time to kick back and recharge and get away. And then when you come back to training camp, you're refreshed and excited about the upcoming challenge in the season.
So, Bill, how is lake life? There's nothing like lake life, right?
No, it's the best. It is phenomenal, especially out in Western Canada where we spent our summer. It's as good as it gets.
You've got Calgary in second place in the Pacific, and they're at home Wednesday against Dallas. Their head coach, Bill Peters, my guest. Bill, great to have you back. Thank you so much.
All right, appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Bill Peters joining us. Hey, Jim Rome here. When you want expert advice, you go to a pro. Now, some folks might consider me a pro at sports, and as a pro at sports, here are some simple advice that can help you out. When you're hitting the sports book and a buddy of yours tells you he's got, quote, a sure thing, you want my pro tip? Go the other way. There's a reason why casinos pop up from the ground nearly every single week in Vegas. There is no such thing as a sure thing in sports. And when you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whether it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Unbelievable and truly surreal weekend in New York City where I was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame on Friday night, along with an amazingly distinguished class. But the whole thing really was pretty surreal. Surreal when you consider, and I did not know this, but I heard the numbers that night. Surreal when you consider there are roughly 65,000 on-air personalities in radio today and only 243 inductees in the Radio Hall of Fame. So to be one of the 243 is pretty mind-boggling to me. especially when you consider the caliber of talent for the class of 2019. The class included Sean Hollywood Hamilton, Harry Harrison, Kevin Embiid, Joe Madison, John Tesh, Ryan Seacrest, and Dr. Ruth Wesheimer. I want to congratulate the entire class of 19, and I could not be more proud to be a part of it and to be associated with those professionals. On a personal note, I could not have been more pleased than to go in with my guys, Kevin Embiid from K-Rock. K-R-O-Q. That is an absolutely legendary morning show on an iconic radio station, K-R-O-Q in Los Angeles. And there is no one better, no one better on or off the air than these dudes. I love these guys. And Bean is moving to London, so that show, as it was, is no longer, although Kevin's going to continue. So I was really fortunate to appear on their show in recent years after listening and admiring them and their work for a number of years. So that was just awesome. So the only thing better than getting the nod from the Hall of Fame was to go in with my guys, Kevin and Bean. The night started, and it was really interesting because we all get to go up there, and we were told that everybody gets a presenter. The presenter gets 3 minutes, and then the inductee gets five. And it was kind of hammered into us that you need to stay on that point. You need to stay on the clock. We ran a little heavy last year. So I went first. You don't get the benefit of knowing how it's going to play out. So I start the evening with my speech, and then Ryan Seacrest closed it with his speech, and he had Jimmy Fallon as his presenter. So he flexed a little bit. He could. He can. He's Ryan Seacrest. And let me tell you, for 1 minute, let me tell you about Seacrest. This dude is a force of nature. This guy, working the way he works, crushing the high-profile projects that he crushes. To see Ryan Seacrest show up the way he did and deliver the way he did Friday night, honestly, was pretty extraordinary. I mean, this guy's a killer. Now, don't get it twisted. Everybody honored Friday night understands this notion of go time. Everybody showed up. Everybody showed out. But I got to say about Seacrest, this guy's got another gear. And then on top of all that, a truly unforgettable weekend because the XR4TI was there with me. Almost the entire crew. Dave Whelan, Adam Hawk, Alvy, the flight deck, Kyle Brandt, who is now a New Yorker, was there to rep the jungle with his wife, Brooke. And best of all, the Rome fam was there to represent. Jake flew in from Madison on Friday night. He hit the ground running and immediately hit the streets of New York City as soon as he got there. Where and what that kid did, I still have no idea. Jake flew in from Madison and immediately hit the streets of New York City. Like, I don't even know who he knows there. Logan flies in with Janet, and then I met up with everybody the next morning, Friday morning, because I touched down at 2 a.m. The other great thing about the weekend was I actually was there more than 24 hours, something I can never do when I appear on the NFL on CBS. Normally, I get there on Saturday night. I stay in my hotel room. I get up. I do the show. I fly right back. I literally never leave the hotel for anything other than to go to the studio. This time that we had almost an entire weekend in the city, so I got out. We had the show Friday night, the ceremony. Then we had a party at a rooftop bar after the event. A bash so good that I left my David August overcoat at the bar and my phone in an Uber. And as I said on Instagram, at least the driver wasn't pissed that he had to come back to the hotel to drop the phone off. Little did I know that same driver made two separate runs to try to give it back to me. I missed the first one for whatever reason. No wonder it seemed like he wanted to give me the hands along with the phone. Good thing it was on my guy Matt Coleman's Uber account. I guarantee homeboy hit all of us with one star after that debacle. I pretty much gave the guy all the cash I had just to get him to chill out. I mean, come on, bro. Really, how many fares did you really lose at 3 o'clock in the morning because of me? Take it easy, Broham. Life is short. It happens. It happens to us all. Don't act like I'm the only guy that's left a phone in your car.
Yeah, it happens.
He was so pissed. He was pissed that he picked us up and we only went like two blocks. We're from California, man. We were wrecked. It was cold. And then he had to come back and drop the phone off. Then we had the entire Saturday to enjoy the city. So I hit a show, Moulin Rouge, which was kick-ass. Then we hit a steakhouse, STK, which my younger son Logan said was his favorite restaurant ever. The kid has traveled throughout Europe, but never gotten a taste of anything like the New York City nightlife. He tried to order a shot. I'm like, Junior, settle the hell down. You're 14. Settle down. Then I made it back to my room, unscathed, with my coat, with my phone, and with my credit card. All in all, it was an all-time great weekend. One that I wish every one of you clones could have experienced with me. Because as corny as it sounds, I did not go in. We all went in. And there's no way that I sniffed that joint without all of you. I know this. And I appreciate and I love the hell out of you clones. And believe me, you were on my mind the entire weekend. If you want to know what it was like to be inside that building, find John in New York. Because as promised, my man John in New York was there to represent. John in New York was living up to all of the advance hype. You remember
Thank
John?
Thank you.
Well, that's not really
awesome
John.
Awesome interviews.
That's Jeff in Southfield doing John. And I got a lot of FaceTime with John on Friday night. John did not once say, "Thank you for all the interviews, Jim."
You're literally my bestest friend.
That did not once come out of his mouth. He did not say, "You are literally my bestest friend." John was great. John was exactly what you would expect. Let's see. Hey, Rome. I coach O. Signed, Dr. Ruth. Mitch from Buffalo. Come on, man. She was incredible. She's 91. And she was up there holding it down. I got to paraphrase what she said. But Dr. Ruth at 91 at the Radio Hall of Fame was on stage speaking to all of us. And she had an assignment for all of us. Everybody in the room. And she said, "I want all of you to go home after this tonight and try a different position." Dr. Ruth said that. At Brian C60 tweets, "Jim, why is Hawk dressed in all black today? Is he mourning the loss of a hipster card?" Wore Hawk burying his mustache in a matchbox in his backyard. We're going to find out why he looks the way he looks today shortly. Eric Paschal is my guest. Eric, it is great to have you on the show. How are you? Hey, Eric, what's up? How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Thanks so much for the conversation. I've been looking forward to it. We've got a lot to talk about, but let me ask you this. You're putting up huge numbers. You're getting ready to face your old friend Donovan Mitchell tonight. How is life for you, and what are the first few weeks of your NBA career been like?
I would say it's been kind of wild, to be honest. Just as a rookie, getting the opportunity that I did in my last four games, and with all the injuries, all the young guys have been getting great opportunities to play. So it's been wild. And, of course, tonight playing against Donovan, that's something very big for our families because, I mean, we've put so much – our families have put so much into each other that it's actually turned out to be a great thing. So, I mean, it's all a blessing, and I'm very excited for the rest of the season.
Eric Paschal joining us. He actually answered my next question. I was going to say, when I talk about the two of you being old friends, I mean, I mean that. The story goes that you and Donovan first met in church when you were six and playing with the Riverside Hawks. Like, what do you remember about the early days with Donovan, and what's it like knowing that you're just a few hours away from playing on the big stage against him?
The early stages were actually fun. I mean, we just, two young kids that love the game of basketball, and me and him were just so cool, and our families were so close. And it's so funny because he actually lived like 20 seconds away from me and like around the same complex. So like right down the street, and our families knew each other since younger. So like it just happened. And then it was so funny. My first time playing for the Riverside Hawks, I go to the tryout and I see Donovan shooting around. So it was just meant to be. I mean, we're two kids from Westchester just trying to make a name for ourselves, and we stuck together through all college, high school, and now in the NBA.
Eric Paschal is my guest. I'm going to ask you about Westchester in a minute, but I got to know, who's the better NBA 2K player, you or Donovan?
Oh, I'm better than him in 2K for 100%. But he's definitely going to say he's better, but I'm definitely better than him.
I figured. All right, so if we go back a little bit, Jay Wright, I knew that to be true. Jay Wright, who coached you at Villanova, has said that you remind him of Bernard King, which is extremely high praise. From the outside, one of the things I appreciate about Jay Wright is his attention to detail. What was it like to play for him, and how much did that prepare you for the NBA?
Honestly, playing for Coach Wright at first was annoying because it was just like, as a young guy coming in, he's so much into detail, like you said. So at first, I'm getting confused with coverages and how to play the game the right way and offensively and defensively. But as you keep continuing through that program, it's actually, like, it helps you out a lot, and it puts you ahead of the curve when it comes to, like, NBA workouts. And even on an NBA team, I mean, I feel like Coach Wright has, like, about 10 pros in the NBA, and, like, we're all doing pretty well just because we all know the game of basketball from him. So he's helped us out tremendously with just being ahead of the learning curve in the NBA.
Right, so does Steve Kerr remind you at all of Jay Wright, like, in terms of culture? And if so, what's that like?
At times, it definitely does. I mean, at times, I definitely feel like I'm back at Villanova, but I mean, it's great. I mean, just having a guy like that, Coach Kerr's doing a great job of just teaching and knowing that all the young guys are still learning and being patient with us, and he's very into detail as well. So sometimes I do feel like I'm back at Villanova, but at a much higher stage.
Golden State Warrior forward, Eric Paschal is my guest. Draymond Green's got this great story about you from before the game against Charlotte. Steve Kerr's going around the room. He's asking players what they know about guys on the Hornets roster. And then he gets to P.J. Washington. Quote, Steve was like, anybody know this guy? Paschal was like, hell yeah, I know something about him. He ducked me all pre-draft, but I'm on his ass tonight. And then he went out there and he did it, and I loved it. End of quote. That's Draymond hyping you up. What you did was you put up 25 to Washington's 11. But to me, Eric, the big thing is you did something that Draymond loved. Like, you earned his respect quickly. What's it been like being around Draymond, and what have you learned from him so far?
That he's a competitor. I mean, and I try to bring that to the table every day. I mean, especially in the same kind of, like, draft position and same body type, that I could learn so much from him. So being around him has just been great, just in terms of learning the game of basketball and learning how competitive he is, and try to take that and use it within my game as well.
You know, Eric, he had something else to say that I thought was really interesting. He was talking about, he raves that you've played big time ball, and you played a lot of it in college. And I want to read you one more quote. He said, quote, the experience matters. You get so many kids who ain't seen bleep, ain't been through bleep. He's been through a lot. Being a first round pick is too easy. Everybody wants to give you something. They want to give you minutes. They want to give you opportunity. They don't want to say they bleeped up. But if you're a second round pick, you can get an opportunity or not. You can make it or not. It doesn't matter. He's had to earn everything, and it shows in his game. End quote. So for you, how important or how valuable was it to battle for everything you have, and how much better has that made you as a player?
I feel like it's made me a much better player. I mean, just in terms of, I feel like it fits my story, just being underrated my whole life and trying to prove myself. So I feel like that was just another step at the highest level to say, God's giving you an opportunity to prove yourself again and show people wrong. So I definitely feel like that that quote definitely sticks with me, just because it's part of it. I mean, it's something I've dealt with my whole life, and I feel like that I'm definitely getting an opportunity to just show myself and show my talents and prove myself again.
We're talking to Eric Paschal. You know, we mentioned Westchester. The thing about Jay Wright that he said about you, in addition to comparing you to Bernard King, is that you're a New York basketball player, just a natural bucket getter. Donovan Mitchell has made the point that some people think that guys from Westchester can shoot, but they're not that tough. That's clearly not the case with you. So how would you describe what it means to be a New York City basketball player and the attitude that comes along with it?
I feel like you just got to be confident every day. I mean, there's a lot of talented New York City basketball players, and especially me and Donovan coming from Westchester, we're behind because everybody just thinks like, oh, we're soft or something like that. So, I mean, me and Donovan's motivation was just, hey, let's prove everybody wrong. Let's prove that we're tough and can do everything that they're doing and try to do it better.
Right, so you're used to winning in college, and you're coming to a situation where the organization is obviously used to winning, but it's been a tough season, obviously, in terms of injuries. What's that part of the experience been like for you?
Of course, it's rough. I mean, I'm a competitor at the end of the day, but at the end of the day, you also have to know that it's a process. And with a whole bunch of young guys in the NBA, you just have to keep learning, put it all together at one point, because you gotta go out and compete, and there's 82 games, and there's so many games that you get that opportunity to prove yourself. So I feel like you always just have to prove yourself. And with a whole bunch of young guys, it's going to be rough, but it's going to come together. And we can't get any better reps than playing in the game anyway, because around this time you don't really practice live because we have so many games every other day. So, I mean, just to go out there and play against a Donovan or a Damian Lillard or a C.J. McCollum, that's the opportunity, and the coaches give us the confidence to just go out there, play hard, and have fun.
I'm glad you brought those guys up. Not only did you get a chance to play against McCollum and Damian Lillard, you had a huge game against Portland in that win, 34-13. Now, you talked to your father, Juan Daly, and as you've said, he's always been on you to make sure you hit the glass and you rebound more. How proud was he after a 34-13 rebound game? In other words, was Pops fired up, or was he also saying, man, you should get 13 every night?
He was actually more excited about the 13 rebounds than the 34 points.
I know he was.
He was just happy about that because I hit the glass, and he always pushes me to always hit the glass and be aggressive on the glass.
And finally, your mom says she was crying. She told you after the game that she was crying. What did it mean to you? Like, Dad's still coaching you up, but what did it mean to you to know that you made your mom and your dad so proud, considering the sacrifices they made for you?
It means a lot for me. I mean, they put so much into me in terms of sacrificing, staying up late for games, bringing me to games. So that matters so much to me. And to make them proud is means the world to me. I mean, my whole family supports me so much, and I thank them so much for it.
It's great. He was the 41st pick overall in the draft, an NCAA champion, an all-conference player at Villanova. Gets to go against a childhood friend tonight. You've got Golden State at home against Utah. Eric Paschal, my guest. Eric, I appreciate you. Great job. Really nice to have you on, and thanks for doing it before a game.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Good night now!